Okay, welcome to Immunize Wisely. I'm your host, Ingrid Castle, and we're going to continue from the previous hour. I grabbed Sally Accordi's hour to interview Jeremy Hammond, as he is pretty good on two burning issues of mine. One, obviously, the vaccine issue, and the other one, Middle Eastern politics. And he is he has a foreign policy journal. I'm going to go ahead and read the bio just for people that weren't from the last hour. Jeremy Hammond is an independent journalist, a political analyst, publisher, and editor of Foreign Policy Journal. That's foreignpolicyjournal.com, as well as an author of several books, including Obstacle to Peace, The U.S. Role in the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict. He writes about numerous topics, including U.S. foreign policy, economics, and vaccines, and that's what we discussed last hour. His work focuses on exposing state propaganda intended to keep people in servitude to the politically and financially powerful, and on illuminating the role of the mainstream corporate media in manufacturing consent for harmful government policies. You can stay up to date with his work by visiting his websites and signing up for his newsletter at jeremyrhammond.com, or you can go to the foreignpolicyjournal.com. Anyway, you need to know at the Foreign Policy Journal, he does highlight a lot of other excellent writers. He has Paul Craig Roberts, which I'm sure many of you have heard on RBN programs, David Swanson. I'm just kind of reading from the list here, but the latest article he has posted is the New York Times Persists in Russia Election Hacking Conspiracy Theory. But I did want to finish up last hour. Jeremy, it's just burning to me. I feel like people need to be real clear when they talk about the measles vaccine, because this measles has been all over the news, and that measles vaccine, it's right in the package insert that the measles vaccine can cause encephalitis and encephalopathy and like this. So do you want to talk about that just a couple minutes before we go into some of the Middle Eastern politics?
Yeah, well, before the break there, we were talking about an article where a guy was saying, you know, he's wrote an article, how to respond to anti-vaxxers, and he claimed in there that he, you know, his approach is to try to understand the perspective of, you know, his interlocutors. And so I published a blog post this morning where I kind of challenge that and respond to that. And so that he presents this simplistic risk-benefit analysis having to do encephalitis. Where he says, you know, measles causes encephalitis in 1 in 1,000 cases, whereas the vaccine causes encephalitis in 1 in 1,000,000 cases. So if we take, you know, if we take those premises, you know, the obvious conclusion is, well, it's obviously of benefit to get the vaccine because the risk is less. And so what I wanted to do in my post was to identify his fallacies, you know, and to show that he obviously had never studied or tried to learn about the perspective of people who choose not to vaccinate strictly according to the CDC schedule. Because, first of all, the relevant analysis that the parents that need to make in countries, he was from Australia. He's an Australian doctor. Whereas, you know, obviously we're speaking in the U.S., but the same principle applies. So in developed countries like the U.S., the risk of actually being exposed to measles, much less being killed or permanently injured by it, is, you know, is very near zero. I mean, very few people get measles during any given year in the United States. And so that's what parents need to consider, that, you know, it's not that, you know, it's not that if they don't get vaccinated that their child has a 1 in 1,000 risk of getting encephalitis. That's if they get measles in the first place. And that's something that parents need to consider. So that's his first fallacy. The second fallacy is that his numbers are wrong. His statistics are wrong. It wasn't 1 in 1,000. Because that's one, he was talking about the number of reported cases, 1 in 1,000 reported cases. But of course, most cases were benign and not reported, so the actual number was closer to something like 1 in 10,000. So he's wrong by an order of magnitude. And he's also wrong about the statistic in terms of he talks as though we know what the risk of encephalitis is from the measles vaccine. That's untrue. We do not, because the studies haven't been done in order to determine what the rate of encephalitis is from vaccination.
Yes.
And so what he's relying on is the same post-marketing surveillance data that we discussed earlier in the first hour, the VAERS, Adverse Event Reporting System, which, as we also discussed in the first hour, suffers from serious underreporting. His argument is completely invalid in every single way. You know, it's just fundamentally wrong. And so if you actually look at the reality of the situation, it's very easy to see why parents might conclude that there's no potential benefit of the vaccine that could possibly outweigh the risk of harm. I mean, they're essentially trading 100%, you know, they're guaranteeing that they're exposing their child to the risk of the vaccine. Whereas if they didn't vaccinate their child, you know, the chances that the child would even be exposed to measles is pretty slim to even begin with. So it's really understandable and very logical and reasonable of parents to see that and to determine that, well, it just doesn't make any sense for me to vaccinate my child. That's a very logical position and a very logical conclusion for parents to make. And so that's just the main point I wanted to make. And of course, he talks about herd immunity in his article. He mentions herd immunity. He says, well, we need to maintain a vaccination rate, you know, 94%, whatever. But we know that that's false, too. In fact, this is known to be false. In the medical literature, it's known to be false. It's acknowledged to be false by leading experts on measles. Gregory Poland, a leading expert on measles. He's the editor of the journal Vaccine. He knows what he's talking about. And he co-authored a 1994 paper in which he said, you know, that even if, you know, the only way for the vaccine to prevent outbreaks of measles would be if it was 100% effective and 100% of people got vaccinated. And of course, 100% of people can't be vaccinated. Even if every single person who could be vaccinated was, it still wouldn't be 100%. And, you know, for example, children under 6 months, it can't be vaccinated. It's just not effective, and it hasn't been proven.
Well, it's shown that it's not 100% effective. There's plenty of people that have gotten the vaccine that have come down with measles and atypical measles. So that's a whole other thing. But I just wanted to wrap up and say that this guy clearly has a conflict of interest being a pediatric infectious disease specialist, you know, for many, many years. So he certainly needs to protect his turf.
Yeah, his ignorance is astonishing given his, you know, credentials.
But, you know, that thing is he does not want to expose, you know, that, you know, things that would threaten his career. He makes a career off, you know, vaccination and, you know, these scary diseases, et cetera, et cetera.
Precisely.
So, but anyhow, let's move on. Because this is going to go really fast this hour, and I know people would probably want to call in, and I want to be able to open up the lines to callers the last hour. I want you to make sure that you get plenty of information in for people that are unfamiliar with your work and the amazing work that you continue to do, even with the Foreign Policy Journal. I mean, you wrote, you know, people then, you know, what I love is that they sign up for your weekly newsletter and they get a free ebook that you wrote, the Israel-Palestine Conflict, a collection of essays. And I mean, it's just excellent. I mean, I downloaded and I was blown away just at how thorough. Just an excellent job. You really do wonderful work, Jeremy.
Thank you.
So, but you know, you're now branching out into several things that I think are great, about like the New York Times persists in Russia election hacking conspiracy theory, and that was just posted yesterday. So I mean, it's like, I don't even know how you keep up with all this. I mean, that was a really great article, because it's so ludicrous how, you know, these mainstream, I mean, don't they realize they're going to discredit themselves? But, you know, most of these newspapers, they get their funding from the pharmaceutical industry for one, and then they're in the pocket of, you know, these people. You know, I guess they're Democrats, who knows, you know, whatever's putting this crazy agenda together, you know, it's so been thoroughly disproven that of the Russian government hacking into the U.S. election infrastructure. I mean, why aren't they reporting on the blatant murder of Seth Rich once Julian Assange, you know, leaked that Seth Rich was the one who leaked those emails that we now know as Pizzagate? I mean, wow, you know, there's no investigation into the murder of Seth Rich. It just kind of disappeared. Another, you know, Clinton scandal of another death. I mean, I just find the whole thing shocking.
Yeah, I wrote that article just in response to a recent New York Times article where they're still persisting in this. Let's just be frank, it's a conspiracy theory that the Russian government hacked or attempted to hack into the U.S. election infrastructure during the 2016 election season. And so what I do is I just show how the New York Times to support the New York Times asserts this as a fact. They don't say, well, according to government sources, it's just an assumed fact that Russia actually did engage in this activity. And so they're citing a recent Senate Intelligence Committee report. But if you actually read the source, if you read that report, that Senate report, there's a lot of information in there that actually contradicts their conclusions. And there's no information that supports their conclusions. None. Zero evidence. There's zero evidence that it's a very heavily redacted report for one. So there's a lot of blacked out information, but there's nothing publicly available to support this claim. Nothing. Not a single shred of evidence. And there's a lot in that report that suggests that the claim is completely false and completely spurious. And specifically, the claim originated with the Department of Homeland Security, who were told, the Senate tells us, that this Department of Homeland Security was getting its information from the states. But then the states were told that the hacking occurred by the DHS. So the states were looking at the exact same information, and there was no concern about it whatsoever. And so I just go through the Senate report and the New York Times article, and I try to show how there's just no evidence at all to support this whole theory. And this isn't the first article, of course, where the New York Times has propagated this conspiracy theory. I had written another article in the past when they had done so on a prior occasion, and then they also remind of the incident with the Vermont Power Utility Company that we were told was hacked. Mm-hmm. And the Washington Post had published an article saying that, that Russians had hacked into the U.S. power grid. And almost as soon as that article was published, it was debunked. It's completely false. And in the end, we come to find out that, number one, the power grid wasn't accessed at all. The computer that was supposedly hacked wasn't even connected to the power grid. It was a laptop computer. Hmm. Number two, the reason that the Department of Homeland Security became aware of it was because DHS had sent out information to all the states to flag their systems for certain IP addresses. And right. So, this had been done, and when this employee had connected to the internet, he was connected. He logged into his email account. He had a Yahoo email account, and it triggered this alert because. The DHS had told them to alert them to a Yahoo IP address. And right. This is what was attributed to being a Russian hack, right? I mean, it's just absurd, and I can go on, but you get the point. Like, it's just completely absurd what the actual evidentiary basis was, and for them to conclude that, the Russians had hacked the power grid, I mean, it was just so completely ridiculous. And that's just what I show in the article, is just how utterly unsubstantiated and how contrary to the known facts, how contrary to the evidence this conclusion is. And yet so many Americans, in fact, I cite a poll showing that the majority of Democrats, unsurprisingly, as well as a significant proportion of Americans in general, actually believe that the Russians hacked into U.S. election infrastructure and changed the votes so that Trump would win. Like, most Democrats actually believe that to be true. I mean, it's insane. It's just a complete delusion that is just, completely contrary to what we know in terms of actual evidence. Now, this is not to say that the Russians didn't try. I mean, I don't know that they didn't. I can't prove a negative. But, in terms of what we do know publicly, what's publicly available is there's just nothing to support that. Which, of course, then we can talk about the whole Democratic National Committee hack and, the Hillary Clinton email hacks, and we can get into that. But it's a related, obviously right. related issue. But, the same thing.
Well,
there's no evidence.
The way I see it, Jeremy, is that they needed a diversion I mean, what was revealed on WikiLeaks was so extreme and so shocking, they needed to cover it up right away. So exactly. They had to especially get rid of Seth Rich, the source, and Julian Assange leaked that. That's why he was dead immediately. And the mainstream media is part of this whole garbage. They're part of Pizzagate. They're all involved. So they're covering it up, and that's where the Russian thing came from. They needed a huge diversion from the truth. And, you know, now the Jeffrey Epstein thing is kind of, you know, it's bringing it all to a head. So, and, you know, and the Nexus, you know, pedophile ring out of, or is it Nexium or something out of Canada. So it's all coming out at this point, even how sick as it is. You know, most people, you know, when they find out this is true, it's going to be really hard for them to swallow, a lot of people, that they've been lied to by the mainstream. But it is going to come out, in my humble opinion. So there's so much other stuff. You know, if you look at the Foreign Policy Journal, it's called foreignpolicyjournal.com. You can find out a lot of fabulous articles written by independent journalists, as well as Jeremy Hammond, too, who is the main editor. So, you know, just beware. He's told me, you know, personally that he's had to, you know, deny people, you know, articles that they wanted to have posted because they just don't get the full picture. And if you read his excellent book, Obstacle to Peace, as well as the free ebook on his website, you'll understand that he does do his research and he does get the whole picture. So, yeah, as I said, it's an honor to have you, Jeremy, on Immunize Wisely and Vaccine Free America, even though we're generally not talking about that this hour, about the, you know, the health vaccine issue. I think this is so important that Republic Broadcasting Network listeners are aware of your incredible independent journalism and that they support you as an independent journalist. And I know that you've also been writing some for Children's Health Defense, which is excellent. That's Robert F. Kennedy's excellent website, and they have many writers, and you're now one of them, and that's wonderful too, because it has it makes your work have a broader reach.
Yes, yeah, I'm a contributing writer for CHD. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, what other things that you? I mean, you have just the website Foreign Policy Journal has been updated. You know, every week, what are some of the things that you'd want our listeners to, you're thinking about? You know, like I'm looking at, is the Federal Reserve losing control of the gold price? I mean, people are really thinking now with all these changes going on, you know, the deep state, you know, being slowly taken down. Stuff with banking is a real concern. You know, people are looking at trying to have a safe haven and getting out of, you know, the electronic currency system and having hard, you know, silver and gold. I know that a lot of my friends are discussing that they feel that they need to preserve what assets they have. And so, and I did not read that article. And I know people at RBN are real interested in that, what's going on with that.
Yeah, I've published a few articles recently specifically on the Federal Reserve and monetary policy. That one that you mentioned was Paul Craig Roberts had written an article, and he's been covering how essentially, you know, the Federal Reserve to control the value of the dollar against the value of gold has, you know, they have this whole kind of organization that can go out and basically sell off a bunch of paper gold. You know, and I hear that.
Okay, we're coming up on a break. I'm sorry. I went too long to introduce that.
No problem.
Okay, you're listening to Immunize Wisely with my guest, Jeremy Hammond.
Don't regret growing old. It's a privilege denied to many. Heart disease is taking our youth from us. Young people in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond are dying needlessly. One of the hardest messages I've ever had to deliver is to convince people that something natural like Extendivite should be taken as a preventative measure. I'm sure you heard, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Extendivite is that ounce. Take Extendivite for 1 year and see what your doctor has to say and how much better you feel. Herbs take time to address the problem. It took years of life to have a problem. Give Extendivite 1 year to fix the problem. Don't wait until it's too late. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or visit us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Welcome back to Immunize Wisely with my guest, Jeremy Hammond. We actually are talking about his foreign policy journal. He has several writers. It comes out weekly, and he has a free ebook, The Israel-Palestine Conflict, a collection of essays that you can get for just signing up for his newsletter. And he also wrote Obstacle to Peace. So, but yeah, I'm just looking at some of the headlines that you have, and I kind of diverted with the whole concern about people, the Federal Reserve losing control of the gold price and what that's about. And, you know, we don't have to talk about that if you want to, you know, talk more about some of the
I think it's a timely, pertinent issue.
You want to talk about, Jeremy.
Yeah, no, let's talk about that because it's a timely, pertinent issue. So obviously, one of my major focuses is the Israel-Palestine conflict, and maybe we can get into that. But let's talk about the Fed because it's just so important. And so I guess the main thing that I would want people to know about the Federal Reserve is, of course, we're all supposed to believe that we have this free market system. But that's simply not true, simply by virtue of the fact that the monetary supply itself is controlled by a government-legislated monopoly. And so, you know, there's a lot of confusion about how the Fed operates. It can be very complicated, and obviously economics itself can be a very complicated subject. But hopefully I can kind of simplify things a little bit, because I think most people kind of, just in terms of common sense, understand more than they know. I mean, you know, we listen to economics talk to us and all this technical mumbo-jumbo, and I think that's somewhat intentional to kind of, you know, to kind of basically deceive us into accepting the way things are, and we should not accept the way things are. We should not accept, you know, having a government legislated monopoly over our currency supply. And so, Some of my recent articles have been in response to mainstream media coverage of the state of the economy. Fairly recently, the New York Times was talking about how, you know, the economy is, you know, everything's fine. And so the point that I made in one of my articles that I published on Foreign Policy Journal in response to that was that, no, the economy is not fine. Things are fundamentally unsound in the economy right now. And this is precisely because of the way the Federal Reserve responded to the last recession, which was, of course, to quadruple the base money supply and just engage in massive monetary inflation. Yes. And this was, of course, the same thing that had caused the problem in the first place. So they responded by doing even more of the same that caused the problem in the first place, because, of course, the housing bubble was also a consequence of the Federal Reserve's monetary inflationary policy. And so what the Federal Reserve does is engages in price fixing. So basically, you know, if you consider the interest rate is an extraordinarily important price in the economy, because it in a free market, it signals entrepreneurs, investors as to the amount of capital available for borrowing and investment. And so, you know, if mm-hmm. rates of savings are high, banks will want to, they'll have huge deposits and they'll want to attract borrowers. And so they'll have low interest rates. Whereas if their reserves are low and they want to attract more depositors, they'll have higher interest rates. So it's supply and demand. Whereas what we have mm-hmm. is, you know, just a fiat, you know, the board of directors of the Federal Reserve Board, you just by fiat declare, you know, set a goal target for interest rates, and then they inflate whatever amount of money is necessary in order to, you know, try to hit that target rate. So it's not the free market determining the rate of interest. They're engaging in price fixing. And this fundamentally distorts, you know, the entire structure of the economy. And mm-hmm. this is really what the key point that I try to get across in my articles on matters of economics. And, you know, I really focus on the role of the Federal Reserve because it's so central to everything that happens in the economy. And so, you know, in Paul Craig Roberts also has, you know, published quite a lot of his articles in Foreign Policy Journal. He's covered the issue in terms of, you know, the Fed and the gold price and whatnot. But I've really just focused mm-hmm. on the mechanisms and trying to help people understand how the Federal Reserve's inflation causes, you know, bubbles and causes the exact problems that then they then try to respond to with even more government intervention, of course. So they're always blaming the free market for the problems that they cause, and then their solution is always to do more of the same that what caused it, only on an even greater scale. And so they're setting us up for the next recession, which is going to be even worse, you know, because they've rather than allowing the market correction to occur, which is what needs to happen. The way they see it, the recession is the disease, and they need to cure it with more by printing more money out of thin air. But of course, wealth doesn't come out of a printing press, and people need to understand that too. That the way they manipulate interest rates is they literally create money out of nothing. You know, they punch numbers on a keyboard, and magically there's more dollars now than there was, you know, a minute ago. And then they use those magically created dollars to purchase assets like U.S. Treasury bonds. This impacts the real rate of return. You know, the
okay. Okay, we're coming up on a commercial break, but most of our listeners hopefully understand the the debt-based money system that we have. And but anyhow, we can just continue after the break. You're listening to Jeremy Hammond on Immunize Wisely.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe. Short walks cause cramping or pains in legs. Memory is not as good as it used to be. Ankles swell late in the day.
chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to try to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. And recently I started having a nagging bicep pain and I couldn't lift weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend of mine, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in the veins and arteries that may cause blockages. After 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and I'm back in the gym full strength. Find out more. Go to angioprim.com, A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim helps promote cardiovascular health. Talk to a trained consultant, or you can call Angioprim toll-free at 877-882-8221. That's 877-882-7221. This statement has not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Okay, welcome back to Immunize Wisely with my guest, Jeremy Hammond. We were talking about the debt-based money and the supply of gold, and I'm actually wanting to move on because this topic actually is discussed quite a bit on Republic Broadcasting Network in general by other hosts, and I don't think what your focus is in the Foreign Policy Journal generally is, you know, on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict is covered quite as much. So, like, I really like the war on innocence, Palestinian children in Israeli military court. I mean, you know, it's just shocking what's really going on, and this is so underreported. I know Allison Weir, If Americans Knew, I subscribe to her information, you know, and it's, but it's relatively unknown. And Allison Weir, she's another independent journalist that's, you know, just desperate to get this information out into the hands of American people to wake them up, because the mainstream media, I mean, it seems like Israel has total control of our country. So how do you feel like you're ever threatened by putting out this information? I mean, this is important information that Americans need to know about.
Well, I have to deal with the trolls constantly, you know, and the personal attacks. I have received threats occasionally. It's not something I feel – it doesn't deter me at all by any means from writing about the things I write about. But, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, the title of Allison Weir's website, If Americans Knew, I mean, that says it all. If Americans knew what was really going on in the Israel-Palestine conflict, it couldn't continue. That's the title of my book, Obstacle to Peace, The U.S. Role in the Israeli-Palestinian Conflict. The U.S. is the major obstacle to peace because the U.S. supports Israel's policy of committing crimes against the Palestinian people, and that's the fundamental, you know, basis of this whole conflict, going back to its origins. And what people think they know, this is the big thing, that what people think they know about this situation just isn't true.
Right.
I like to say, forget about what you think you know about this issue. It's just what most people think they know about it is fiction and myths and propaganda. And if you get down to the fundamental truths of what this issue is, you know, what, how this conflict originated, the reasons for its persistence, why has this conflict, you know, been going on for so long? How is that possible? If we look at the true reasons for that, they're completely different from what we're told by government officials, by the mainstream media. So people are just inundated with this propaganda narrative that really is essentially equivalent to Zionist propaganda. So people are getting completely Israeli point of view when they read the New York Times, when they read the Washington Post, when they hear political officials, congressional people talking about this issue. They're getting this Zionist perspective. And I actually disagree largely with the perspective that Israel controls U.S. policy. This is, to me, actually a fundamental error because we talk about the Israel lobby and its influence on Congress, and yes, definitely that is a factor, and it's a big factor, and it's one we should consider. But the way I like to put it is this: you know, it isn't required. You know, money from AIPAC, the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, or you know, any of these other organizations that we consider to be, you know, part of the Israel lobby. Money from the Israel lobby isn't required to explain the way Congress people vote on this issue, their perspective on this issue, when Congress people are themselves ideologically Zionists. And so to me, the bigger influence really is not an outside foreign influence. It is the American culture. It's the American, you know, the Christian Zionism that is within the country that already exists, that in fact Christian Zionism predated political Zionism. And that is fundamentally more a bigger factor in U.S. foreign policy, from my analysis, than the Israel lobby. And so I think we need to look at that and just look at, you know, this isn't necessarily politicians being manipulated by, you know, pro-Israeli people or Israelis, or it's not necessarily that's the case. It's that Congress people, they subscribe to this, you know, this political view, this view of Zionism that the Jews just have a right to this land. And
well, what about the pledge? You know, they take a pledge to AIPAC. I mean, Cynthia McKinney exposed that on a talk show out of England. Oh gosh, what's his name? But anyway, I shared it countless times, just her half hour interview, because she lays it all out, you know, where you take the pledge and you ask these people, and they ended up signing a pledge where their allegiance is to AIPAC and Israel over our own country. It's a pledge they actually sign, and then they get donations towards their campaign. This is, you know, at least for the federal employees. And then, you know, we have this whole they want to censor any criticism of Israel. You know, anti-Semitic,
sure,
they would call,
yeah,
it, you know, any kind of speech. But, you know, they had a teacher in Texas that was basically fired because she would not sign, an agreement that she would, you know, not engage in any activity that showed any criticism of Israel or, you know, AIPAC or, I mean, and that was Senate Bill 1. It happened this year. I don't know if you were familiar with the very first bill. It was a carryover from last year. And they were trying to, you know, bring up this hate crime laws and make it national instead of up to the states. And over 50% of the states have passed some kind of legislation that forbids any questioning, actually, it has to do with, what is it called? You know, when they, you know, you're boycotting, the boycott,
the BDS,
you know, boycott, divest, and
yeah,
sanction.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this certainly goes on so, in terms of, there's been states that have proposed legislation to basically forbid people from, you know, the right to free speech in terms of saying, you know, I boycott Israel. Or but what they're really talking about in terms of boycotting Israel is boycotting goods that are made in illegally constructed Israeli settlements in the occupied territory of the West Bank. And they, of course, yes. The people who are trying to silence this criticism never really specify that. You know, it's always that, you know, it's a boycott of Israel. Well, not exactly. Right. And so, certainly there's, again, you know, I don't want to diminish the influence of the lobby. It does have influence. But my point is that I think what the bigger influence is that is often overlooked is the influence of Christian Zionism itself. So I tend to focus more on that influence, and I don't really look at it, you know, in terms of U.S. foreign policy. I don't see it as necessarily being guided or determined by the Israel lobby. I see it more as just that's the way policymakers think. You know, it's just in line with their own predetermined beliefs. And they're just as deluded as most of the public about this issue. I mean, there's so much, again, what Westerners get, you know, through the media, through politicians, is propaganda. And, you know, going right back to the origins of the conflict. I mean, the version of the origins of the conflict that most people are familiar with probably, you know, goes along the lines of something like this, that you know, of course, of World War II, and then the Ottoman Empire was dissolved, and the British occupied that territory, and there was the whole Balfour Declaration. They promised, you know, a homeland for the Jewish people in Palestine, and then on and on you get to the point of the proposal to partition, you know, the supposedly fair proposal to partition the plan, and the Arabs unreasonably rejected the partition plan, and instead waged war on the newly formed state of Israel. You know, this genocidal war, and, you know, on and on with this blatant propaganda. I mean, it's just a bunch of fiction. Everything that I just said is complete fiction. This is what we're told. Everything is fiction. Starting with the fact that the Arabs the Arabs didn't invade Israel in 1948 for the simple reason that Israel didn't exist. They entered Palestine to prevent the ongoing ethnic cleansing operations that were happening. You know, I mean, this is just fundamentally what we're told is wrong in terms of history. And so that's how Israel was established. Israel was not established through any kind of legitimate political process, as we're told to believe. A lot of people believe it was established, created by the UN. It's completely false. It's a complete myth. Israel was actually established by ethnically cleansing most of the Arab population from their homes in Palestine, and then systematically wiping their villages off the map so that they could never return to those homes. That's how Israel was established. So it was land theft. It was violence and war, and theft and destruction. That's how Israel was established. So, you know.
Yeah, Israel, well, I totally agree with everything you say, but you keep mentioning Christian Zionism, and I know that my close friend, she wrote a whole article on the roots of Christian Zionism having to do with the Cyrus Schofield, you know, and the Schofield Bible, and, you know, that whole thing that happened in the 1800s with the introduction of the rapture and, you know, these different change agents, you know, taking biblical information and twisting it and, you know, really changing scripture so that instead of, you know, the Jews being people that, you know, were responsible for hanging, you know, or crucifying Jesus Christ, it was, you know, this whole twist of, you know, this Judeo-Christianity, and that, you know, we're all together on this, and it's, anyway, it's all, you know, I don't want to, you know, take away from what you're saying, but it seems this Christian Zionism seemed to be started from back then with Cyrus Schofield being funded and as a preacher. Would you agree with that or no?
I don't know the origins of it. What I know is that I was raised in a Christian family, and I was around a lot of, you know, Christians growing up, going to church and things, and this was just a general attitude of people that, you know, like so many times I heard, you know, we have to support Israel no matter what. This is biblical. We have to support Israel no matter what. And so they just, people are just, are, they just have this kind of predetermined judgment about the conflict, and it, where the Jews are the good guys and the Palestinians are the bad guys, and that's that. And it's really that simple for people. And so they just, people are just, because it already, it, because it conforms with their belief system, they're willing to accept any information that supports that paradigm. And of course,
right.
You know, this just, it's just basic, what's the bias called? I forget the term for it, but you know, people are biased in terms of the information that they are willing to accept, and the information right. that they ignore and reject. And, this is just human nature. And so, you know, that's what I've seen. Same with, you know, same with Iraq.
So you don't see, I mean, that people usually don't go into any depth in terms of thinking that there's different kinds of Jews. There's a Sephardic Jews. There's ones from, you know, South Russia that adopted the Jewish religion. Or, you know, they don't ever go deep enough to understand that, you know, there's different tribes and there's different Jews and, you know.
Well, some people do. But, you know, I think for the general population of, you know, like, of Christians, of conservative Christians, Christian Zionists specifically, they mm-hmm. they don't really have any kind of deep understanding at all about the origins of where their beliefs came from or of the conflict, and they just they know what they're told, you know, from the pulpit, and they just have this belief that, you know, we have to support Israel, and it's prophetic, and it's the way they see it. The establishment of Israel in 1948 was the fulfillment of prophecy, and that's just that's just their worldview. And that's the other reason that this conflict is really so hard, because it, you know, when you're dealing with people who, that's their belief system, it's really hard to get people to change their belief system, their fundamental core beliefs. No matter what the facts are, you just can't persuade certain people.
Right.
And that's one of the problems.
Yeah, same with 9/11, because, you know, this is the greatest country in the world. We're the freest nation, blah, blah, blah. And people could not look. I mean, there's a whole documentary just about the psychological aspect of 9/11. And people basically, they rejected it because it would undermine all their beliefs about our country and what's true and what's not. And they couldn't handle their worldview being shaken that much. And I think it's true when you talk about Christian Zionism.
Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, the foundational beliefs that they hold dear. It's like saying the world is flat when it's round or vice versa. You know, I mean, it's too much.
Yeah. Well, and to give another example of that, with, you know, right after 9/11, I mean, almost immediately, I mean, in early 2002, they were already kind of building the propaganda campaign for the war on Iraq, and I remember that's how I got started as a journalist. I started writing emails home to families and friends, just saying, like, look, there's no evidence Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. The government is lying. They're trying to start a war, and so there's this propaganda campaign, and they're lying. And the responses I got to those emails was just horrific from my perspective. I mean, people just refuse. I mean, I was attacked. I got called, you know, I was called un-Christian and, you know, all kinds of names. I was unpatriotic and I was ignorant. And of course, I was right. That didn't matter. But just the responses. I'm talking about from like friends and family. Like the responses I got were quite shocking. I really struggled with that for a long time. But I ultimately kind of came to realize what it was. And it was just that they couldn't bring themselves to accept that their government would lie to them to start a war. It just fundamentally contradicted their paradigm, their worldview, and so they couldn't accept that reality. And so they chose to believe whatever lies it was necessary in order to maintain their paradigm, their personal belief system. And that's what happens. I mean, that's it's kind of human nature.
And so
this is what we're up against.
True, you know, because I was, Jeremy, I was married to an investigative journalist, and we published the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11. We sold over 80,000 copies nationwide, and the 24-page, you know, booklet, and, you know, just summarizing in Reader's Digest language. But before we published that, we were putting it in the newspaper, and, you know, Don's father just was just so upset and said, you know, I'm more patriotic than you. He was pretty redneck, and he said, I'm more patriotic than you, you know, having vigils with these ring-nosed hippies, you know. This is from a redneck. I'm just saying, you know, it was all, like, really jarring to my husband, and he, so it led him to write a his infamous essay, Slavery in the Eight Bales. And if you've never seen Slavery in the Eight Bales, it's all over YouTube. People have done many renditions of it, but the original essay is pretty revealing why people have a mental block. So we're coming up on a break. Stay tuned to Immunize Wisely with my guest, Jeremy Hammond.
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great. Thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more, plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Immunize Wisely with my guest, Jeremy Hammond. We're near the end of the first hour of the show. The previous hour during Sally's show, we talked about the vaccine issue that Jeremy has written extensively on. We are going to take callers the last hour. So if you do want to call in and you want to discuss something with Jeremy or you have a question, the number is 800-313-9443. Again, that's 1-800-313-9443. And Jeremy, do you want to go ahead and give everyone a plug of what you've written, like your website, so that people can donate to your work and subscribe to your both the Foreign Policy Journal and your website on vaccines?
Sure. Just head to jeremyrhammond.com, and you'll see the opt-in forms there on pretty much any page of my website to sign up for my newsletter. Depending on your interest, if you're interested in the Israel-Palestine conflict, you can get a free ebook on that subject. If you're interested in health and vaccines, you can go to jeremyrhammond.com/FDA, and I've got a free report there explaining the flaws in the FDA vaccine approval process. In fact, horrifying realities about that process. And then I also am the publisher and editor of Foreign Policy Journal, so foreignpolicyjournal.com. Same thing there. You can go ahead and subscribe to the newsletter, stay updated with the latest from latest articles that I publish at Foreign Policy Journal.
Yeah, even I mean, your stuff is so current. I love this from August 2nd. Here are five big holes in Mueller's work, you know, and it starts out, you know, about the whole. I mean, I think everyone was so shocked at how blatant. I mean, this is the. Does he really have this position? As I mean, I don't know. I have a hard time even believing that he was head of the FBI ever. I mean, he's never done any. I mean, what has he done? I don't know.
Yeah, it's the whole Russiagate issue is pretty ridiculous. We had to already kind of discuss that a bit.
I just think he should be hung for treason. I mean, he didn't investigate Seth Rich's murder. I mean, there's so much stuff that's like he didn't do. You know, where's the accountability?
Yeah, right. So, and he won't answer questions about the origins of the investigation, like what was the, you know, in terms of like the Steele dossier and that influence, and you know, even though Steele was hired by the DNC, just like CrowdStrike, the company that, you know, supposedly found the proof that it was the Russians that hacked the DNC. You know, the FBI never did its own forensic investigation of the server of the DNC. They just relied on this report from CrowdStrike, which was hired by the DNC. I mean, it's just utterly ridiculous. All standards of evidence are just thrown out the window, and we're supposed to believe this is a serious investigation. There's nothing serious about it.
There was nothing serious about it. It was like, wow. It was a diversion.
It was a diversion.
Diversion from Pizzagate. Yeah. Is the way I see it.
Yes. Yeah.
And they were desperate to divert the attention from their, you know, satanic rituals and their, you know, sex cults. It's just disgusting. So anyway, that's the way. That's all I can say. You know, is that it has. That's the only explanation. They needed desperately to divert attention. The mainstream media was involved. But anyway. We are ending the show right now, the first hour anyway. So please call in for the next hour. That's 1-800-313-9443, because we can talk about all this for a long time. But I know people would love to interact with my wonderful guest, Jeremy Hamm.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.